No, the first technique. Each thing is perceived through knowing. The self shines in space through knowing. Perceive one being as knower and known. Whenever you know something, it is known through knowing. The object comes to your mind through the faculty of knowledge. You look at a flower, you know this is a rose flower. The rose flower is there and you are inside. Something from you comes to the rose flower. Something from you is projected on the rose flower. Some energy moves from you, comes to the rose, takes its form, color and smell and comes back and informs you that this is a rose flower. All knowledge, whatsoever you know, is revealed through the faculty of knowing. Knowing is your faculty. Knowledge is gathered through this faculty. But knowing reveals two things, the known and the knower. Whenever you are knowing a rose flower, your knowledge is half if you forget the knower who is knowing it. So while knowing a rose flower, there are three things. The rose flower, the known, and the knower, you, and the relationship between the two, knowledge. So knowledge can be divided in three points. Knower, known, and knowing. Knowing is just like a bridge between two points, the subject and the object. Ordinarily, your knowledge reveals only the known. The knower remains unrevealed. Ordinarily, your knowledge is one arrow. It points to the rose, but it never points to you. Unless it starts pointing you, that knowledge will allow you to know about the world, but it will not allow you to know about yourself. All the techniques of meditation are to reveal the knower. George Gurdjieff used a particular technique just like this. He called it self-remembering. He said, whenever you are knowing something, always remember the knower. Don't forget it in the object. Remember the subject. While just now you are listening to me, when you are listening to me, you can listen in two ways. Your mind can be focused towards me, then you forget the listener. Then the speaker is known, but the listener is forgotten. Gurdjieff said that while listening, know the speaker and also know the listener. Your knowledge must be double-arrowed, pointing to two points, the knower and the known. It must not flow in one direction towards the object. It must flow simultaneously towards two directions, the known and the knower. This he called self-remembering. Looking at a flower, also remember the one who is looking at. Difficult, because if you do and try it, if you try to be aware of the knower, you will forget the rose. You have so much become fixed to one direction that it will take time. If you become aware of the knower, then the known will be forgotten. If you become aware of the known, then the knower will be forgotten. But a little if first, and by, you can be aware of both simultaneously. And when you become capable of being aware of both, this Gurdjieff calls self-remembering. This is one of the oldest techniques Buddha used, and Gurdjieff again introduced it to the Western world. Buddha calls it Samyak Smriti, right mindfulness. He said, your mind is not in a right mindfulness if it knows only one point. It must know the both. And a miracle happens. If you are aware of both known and knower, suddenly you become the third. You are neither. Just by endeavoring to be aware of both the known and the knower, you become the third. You become a witness. A third possibility arises immediately. A witnessing self has come into being. Because how can you know both? If you are the knower, then you remain fixed to one point. In self-remembering, you shift from the fixed point of the knower. Then the knower is your mind, and the known is the world. And you become a third point, a consciousness, a witnessing self. This third point cannot be transcended. And that which cannot be transcended is the ultimate. That which can be transcended is not worth. Because then it is not your nature, you can transcend it. I will try to explain you through an example. In the night you sleep and you dream. In the morning you are awake and the dream is lost. While you are awake there is no dream. A different world comes into your view. You move in the streets, you work in a factory or in an office. Then you come back to your home, again you fall asleep in the night, and this world that you knew while you were awake disappears. Then you don't remember who you are. Then you don't know whether you are black or white, poor or rich, wise or foolish, you don't know anything. Young or old, you don't know. Man or woman, you don't know. All that was related with the waking consciousness disappears. You enter the world of dreams. You forget the waking world. It is no more. In the morning again, the dreaming world disappears. You come back. Which is real? Because while you are dreaming, the real world, the world that you knew when you were awake, is no more. You cannot compare. And while you are waking, the dreaming world is no more. You cannot compare. Which is real? Why you call the dreaming world unreal? What is the criterion? If you say because it disappears when I am awake, this cannot be the criterion, because your waking world disappears when you are dreaming. And really, if you argue this way, then the dreaming world may be more real. Because while you are awake, you can remember the dream. But while you are dreaming, you cannot remember the waking consciousness and the world around it. So which is more real and more deep? The dreaming world completely washes away the world that you call real. your real world cannot wash away the dreaming world so totally. It seems more solid, more real. And what is the criterion? How to say? How to compare? Tantra says that both are unreal. Then what is real? Tantra says the one who knows the dreaming world and one who knows the waking world, he is real, because he is never transcended. He is never cancelled. Whether you dream or whether you are awake, he is there, uncancelled. So Tantra says the one who knows the dream and one who knows that now the dream has stopped, one who knows the waking world and one who knows now the waking world has disappeared, is the real. Because there is no point when it is not. It is always there. That which cannot be cancelled by any experience is the real. That which cannot be transcended, beyond which you cannot go, is yourself. If you can go beyond it, then it was not yourself. This method of Gurdjieff, which he calls self-remembering, or Buddha's method, which he calls right mindfulness, or this Tantra Sutra, they lead to one thing. They lead within you to a point which is neither the known nor the knower, but a witnessing self which knows both. This witnessing self is the ultimate. You cannot go beyond it. Because now whatsoever you do will be witnessing. Beyond witnessing you cannot move. So witnessing is the ultimate substratum, the basic ground of consciousness. This sutra will reveal to you, each thing is perceived through knowing. The self science in space through knowing. Now perceive one being as knower and known. If you can perceive in yourself one point which is both knower and known, then you have transcended object and subject both. Then you have transcended the matter and mind both. Then you have transcended the outer and inner both. You have come to a point where knower and the known is one. There is no division. With the mind, division will remain. Only with the witnessing self, division disappears. With the witnessing self, you cannot say who is known and who is the knower. It is both. But this has to be based on experience. Otherwise, it becomes a philosophic discussion. So try it, to experiment. You are sitting near a rose flower. Look at it. The first thing to do is be totally attentive. Give total attention to the rose, so that the whole world disappears and only the rose remains there, to the being of the rose. If the attention is total, then the world disappears. Because the more attention is concentrated on the rose, everything else falls away. The world disappears, only the rose remains. The rose becomes the world. This is the first step, to concentrate on the rose. If you cannot concentrate on the rose, it will be difficult to move to the knower. Because then your mind is always divergent. So concentration becomes the first step towards meditation. Only the rose remains. The whole world has disappeared. Now you can move inwards. Now the rose becomes the point from where you can move. Now see the rose and start becoming aware of yourself, the knower. In the beginning, you will miss. When you will shift to the knower, the rose will drop out of consciousness. It will become faint. It will go away, distant. Again you will come to the rose and you will forget the self. This play will go on, hide and seek. But if you persist, sooner or later a moment will come when suddenly you will be in between the knower, the mind, and the rose there, and you will be just in the middle, looking at both. That middle point, that balancing point, is the witness. And once you know that, you have become both. Then the rose, the known, and the knower, the mind, are just two wings of you. Then the object and subject are just two wings. You are the center of both. They are extensions of you. Then the world and the divine are both extensions of you. You have come to the very center of being. And this center is just a witness. Perceive one being as knower and known. Start by concentrating on something. When the concentration has come to be total, then try to move inwards, become mindful of yourself, and then try to balance. It will take time, months, even years. It depends how intense is your effort, because it is the most subtle balancing, coming between the two. But it happens, and when it happens, you have reached to the center of existence. In that center, you are rooted, grounded, silent, blissful, in ecstasy, and duality is no more. This is what Hindus have called samadhi. This is what Jesus will call the kingdom of God. But just understanding it verbally will not be of much help. But if you try, you will start from the very beginning to feel that something is happening. When you will concentrate on the rose, the world will disappear. This is a miracle, when the whole world disappears. Then you come to understand that it is your attention which is basic. And wherever you move your attention, a world is created. And from wherever you remove your attention, the world drops. So you can create worlds through your attention. Look at it in this way. You are sitting here. If you are in love with someone, then suddenly only one person remains in this hall. Everyone else disappears. It is not there. what happens? Why only one person remains when you are in love? The whole world drops really. It is phantom-like, shadows. Only one person is real. Because now your mind is concentrated on one person. Your mind is totally absorbed in one person. Everything else becomes shadow-like, a shadow existence. It is not real for you. Whenever you can concentrate, the very concentration changes the whole pattern of your existence, the whole pattern of your mind. Try it on anything. You can try it on a Buddha statue, or a flower, or a tree, or anything, or just on the face of your beloved or your friend. Just look at the face. It will be easy, because if you love some face, it is very easy to concentrate. And really, those who try to concentrate on Buddha, on Jesus, on Krishna, they were lovers. They loved Buddha. So it was very easy for Sariputta or for Moggallan, the disciples, to concentrate on Buddha's face. The moment they looked at Buddha's face, they were easily flowing towards that. The love was there. They were infatuated. So try to find out a face. Any face will do, you love. And just look in the eyes and concentrate on the face. Suddenly the whole world drops. A new dimension has opened. Your mind is concentrated on one thing. Then that person or that thing becomes the whole world. When I say this, I mean that if your attention is total at anything, that thing has become the whole world. You create the world through your attention. Your world you create through your own attention. And when you are totally absorbed, flowing like a river to the object, then suddenly start becoming aware of the original source from where this attention is flowing. The river is flowing. Now become aware of the origin. In the beginning, you will get lost again and again. You will shift. If you will move to the origin, you will forget the river and the object, the sea, towards it is flowing. It will change. If you come to the object, you will forget the origin. It is natural, because mind has become fixed either to the object or to the subject. That's why so many persons go into retreat. Just they leave the world. Leaving the world basically means leaving the object, so that they can concentrate on themselves. It is easy. If you leave the world and close your eyes and close your all the senses, you can be aware of yourself easily. But again, that awareness is false, because you have chosen one point of duality. This is another extreme of the same disease. First you were aware of the object, the known, and you were not aware of the subject, the knower. Now you are fixed with the knower and you have forgotten the known. But you remain divided in duality. And this is the old mind again in a new pattern. Nothing has changed. That's why my emphasis is not to leave the world of the objects. Don't leave the world of the objects. Rather, try to become aware of both the subject and the object simultaneously. The outer and the inner simultaneously. If both are there, only then you can be balanced between them. If one is there, you will get obsessed with it. So those who go to the Himalayas and close themselves, they are just like you, standing in a reverse position. You are fixed with the objects, they are fixed with the subject. You are fixed with the outer, they are fixed with the inner. Neither you are free nor they. Because you cannot be free with the one. With the one, you become identified. You can be free only when you become aware of the two. Then you can become the third. And the third is the free point. With one, you become identified with it. With two, you can move. You can sift. You can balance. And you can come to a midpoint, absolute midpoint. Buddha used to say that his path is a middle path, Majjhima Nikaya. It has not been really understood why he insisted so much to call it the middle path. This is the reason, because his whole process was of mindfulness. It is the middle path. So Buddha says, don't leave the world. And don't cling to the other world. Rather be in between. Don't leave one extreme and move to the other. Just be in the middle, because in the middle both are not. Just in the middle you are free. Just in the middle there is no duality. You have come to one. And the duality has become just the extension of you, just two wings. Buddha's middle path is based on this technique. It is beautiful. For so many reasons it is beautiful. One, it is very scientific. Because only between two you can balance. If there is only one point, imbalance is bound to be there. So Buddha says, those who are worldly are imbalanced. And those who have renounced are again imbalanced to the other extreme. A balanced man is one who is neither on this extreme nor on that. He lives just in the middle. You cannot call him worldly, you cannot call him the otherworldly. He is free to move. He is not attached to any. He has come to the midpoint, the golden mean. Secondly, it is very easy to move to the other extreme, very easy. If you eat too much, you can fast easily, but you cannot diet easily. If you talk too much, you can go into silence very easily, but you cannot talk less. If you eat too much, it is very easy not to eat at all. This is another extreme. But to eat moderately, to come to a midpoint, is very difficult. To love a person is easily. To hate a person is easily. To be simply indifferent is very difficult. From one extreme you can move to the other. To remain in the middle is very difficult. Why? Because in the middle you have to lose your mind. Your mind exists in extremes. Mind means the excess. Mind is always extremist. Either you are for or you are against. You cannot be simply neutral. Mind cannot exist in neutrality. It can be here or there, because mind needs the opposite. It needs to be opposed to something. If it is not opposed to anything, it disappears. Then there is no functioning for it. It cannot function. Try this in any way. Become neutral, indifferent. Suddenly, mind has nothing to function. If you are for, you can think. If you are against, you can think. If you are neither for nor against, what is left to think? Buddha says that indifference is the basis of the middle path. Upeksha, indifference. Be indifferent to the extremes. Just try one thing, to be indifferent to the extremes. A balancing happens. This balancing will give you a new dimension of feeling, where you are both the knower and the known, the world and the other world, this and that, the body and the mind. You are both, and simultaneously neither, above both. A triangle has come into existence. You may have seen many occult secret societies have used triangle as their symbol. Triangle is one of the oldest occult symbols, just because of this. Because triangle has three angles. Ordinarily, you have only two angles. The third is missing. It is not there yet. It has not evolved. The third angle is beyond both, and both belong to it. They are part of it, and still it is beyond and higher than both. If you do this experiment, you will help to create a triangle within yourself. The third angle will arise by and by, and when it comes, then you cannot be in misery. Once you can witness, you cannot be in misery. Misery means getting identified with something. But one subtle point has to be remembered. Then you will not even get identified with bliss. That's why Buddha says that I can say only this much, that there will be no misery in samadhi, in ecstasy. There will be no misery. I cannot say that there will be bliss. Buddha says, I cannot say that. I can simply say there will be no misery. And he is right. Because bliss means when there is no identification of any type, not even with bliss. This is very subtle. If you feel that you are blissful, sooner or later you will be in misery again. If you feel you are blissful, you are preparing to be miserable again. You are still getting identified with a mood. You feel happy. Now you get identified with happiness. The moment you get identified with happiness, unhappiness has started. Now you will cling to it. Now you will become afraid of the opposite. Now you will expect it to remain with you constantly. You have created all that is needed for misery to be there. And then misery will enter. And when you get identified with happiness, you will get identified with misery. Identification is the disease. at the third point you are not identified to anything. Whatsoever comes and passes, you remain a witness, just a spectator, neutral, indifferent, unidentified. The morning comes and the sun rises and you witness it. You don't say that I am the morning. Then the noon comes. You don't say that I have become the noon. You witness it. And then the sun sets and darkness comes and the night. You don't say that I am darkness, I am night. You witness it. You say there was morning, then there was noon, then there was evening, and now there is night. And again there will be morning and the circle will go on. And I am just an onlooker. I go on witnessing. If the same becomes possible with your moods, moods of the morning and moods of the noon and moods of the evening and the night, and they have their own circle, they go on moving, and you become a witness. You say, now happiness has come, just like a morning, and now night will come, the misery, and the moods will go on changing around me, and I will remain centered in myself. I will not get attached to any mood. I will not cling to any mood. I will not hope for anything, and I will not feel frustrated. I will simply witness whatsoever happens. I will see it. When it comes, I will see. When it goes, I will see. Buddha uses many times, he says again and again that a thought arises, look at it. A thought of misery, a thought of happiness. It arises, look at it. It comes to a climax, look at it. Then it starts falling down, look at it. Then it disappears, look at it. Arising, adjusting, dying, and you remain just a witness. Go on looking at it. This third point makes you a witness. Sakshi. And to be a witness is the highest possibility of consciousness.